Can anybody hear me without the microphone? Can anybody hear me again? Okay. Conscious is very, very different than most of the other mitzvahs that we have. For instance, if you decide that tomorrow you want to keep Shabbos, it's fine and dandy, but it's not Shabbos. If on Shabbos you decide, the boys decide they want to put on tefillin, there's serious problems with doing that. And there are other mitzvahs as well that apply at different times, different stages in our lives, different times of the year, and just don't apply at other times. Or sometimes don't even apply at all. For instance, nowadays, many of the mitzvahs that we have for the Beis HaMikdash don't apply because we don't have a Beis HaMikdash. But kashrus is something that applies every single day, almost every single hour of our lives. We are human beings. As human beings, we are required to eat for our health, for our well-being. And therefore, if we eat something, we have to make sure that it's kosher. You can't say, well, I'm going to take a day off today because I don't feel like eating kosher, so I have an off day to kosher. It doesn't happen. Even on a day like Yom Kippur or Tisha B'Av, when we have to fast, if for some medical reason or other reason we are required to eat, we have to eat kosher. We can't say, well, since I'm not allowed to eat on Tisha B'Av, so I'm going to eat, I might as well eat not kosher. Doesn't apply. If we eat, we can eat kosher. That is a mission that we have that applies to us every day of our waking lives. Now, as you all know, the laws of kashrus, of keeping kosher, are delineated in the Torah. Tells us what kind of animals we can eat, how we have to separate between meat and milk, and other such laws of eating that are in the Torah. However, how many of those are really applicable today in our daily lives? For instance, we know that for a fish to be kosher, it has to have what? Scales and fins. How many of you have ever seen a can of fish with scales and fins? It's not there. Or, for meat, for meat to be kosher, it has to chew its cud and have a split hook, right? How many of you have ever had a hamburger and seen a split hook, or watched the hamburger chew its cud? Doesn't apply. So how do we know when something is kosher? How do we know if something is kosher? So for that, we have many, many helpful organizations, etc., that do the job for us in keeping kosher. One of the primary companies is the OU. The OU stands for the Orthodox Union, or the Union of Orthodox Jewish Congregations of America. Has been in existence for over 100 years, and they monitor. We go to companies to see what is going on as far as our food goes. In fact, it has been shown that the OU logo is probably the most widespread logo in the world. The OU represents over 10,000 companies, over 100,000 products, virtually all over the world. I myself have been to Thailand, China, Belize, Puerto Rico, Ireland, many, many strange countries, Mississippi, been all over the place doing kosher work for the OU to make sure that when you eat products, when you have something to eat, you know 100% that it is kosher. Now, the food technology world from today is much, much different than it was even 5 years ago. There are new things, new developments going on in foods that people never even dreamed of. For instance, there's a company in Israel that's developing with enzymes and gene technology a square tomato. You know why you want a square tomato? Because when you put them in the box of the ship, they pack very nicely in a square box. And if any of you ever try to make a salad, and the knife is not that sharp, the tomato tends to roll around. So a square tomato would be very nice to have for cooking water. And this is all using gene technology and enzymes, things that we never even thought about 10, 15 years ago in food technology. The same thing applies as far as ingredients as well. Take a stick of gum. How many ingredients do you think there are in a stick of gum? By last count, most gums had somewhere between 20 to 30. I'm not talking about what it says on the label. I'm talking about the ingredients that go into the ingredients that go into the ingredients that go into the ingredients. And sometimes you have serious problems, conscious-wise, from these ingredients. For instance, there's a coloring known as carmine red. Carmine red is made to give fruits and vegetables a very, very nice red color. Carmine red comes from a beetle in South America, where they crush up the beetles and take the blood, and they convert it into a color. That is 1,000% not kosher, because it comes from an animal that's not kosher. It comes from a beetle. So if you see a product that has on it carmine red, you have to stay away from it. There's a yellow color that comes from the intestines of a cat. And this goes into products to make them yellow. Now, you don't have to be so alarmed, because there are many, many colors out there that are 100% kosher. Yellows, reds, blues, greens. But this is an inkling of some of the things that are going into food that you have no idea about. The average person has no idea about. When you make products, the OU, or rather when products are made, the OU goes back not only, as I said, into the ingredients themselves, but sometimes the ingredients that go into the ingredients. I had a question once, something came and asked me. There was a restaurant in town that was advertising itself as being a vegan restaurant. Vegan means no meat, right? And no cheese, no milk products. And they want to know if it was kosher, could people go there to eat in this vegan restaurant? So I went there, and I said, you know, I wouldn't be 1,000%, but you'd probably have as many problems in this vegan restaurant than if you had gone to a McDonald's kind of hamburger. And they looked at me shocked. And I said, because the people who run the vegan restaurant, they're fine people. They're trying to do their best. But they don't have the organization, they don't have the means to go that far back. What do I mean by that? For instance, they had a salad dressing there. Salad dressing had in it glycerin. It has actually had a gum base, whatever. The gum base is made by using the sap of a pine tree and glycerin. You put them under a chemical reaction and you get a gum. Now, something like a chewing gum, but you get a gum base. And that is what gives the dressing its consistency. Now, the pine tree is no problem. But looking at the glycerin, the question comes up, was glycerin artificial? Was it vegetable? Or was it meat? You can make glycerin from all three products. And you can't tell the difference in the laboratory. If you have three cups, each one with glycerin, one from animal, one from vegetable, and one artificial, you cannot tell the difference. So when they're making this gum for this salad dressing, which glycerin are they using? I asked the guy in the vegan restaurant, he had no clue whatsoever. He said, all I can tell you is that I was told that the dressing itself is fine. From his cover, as far as vegan goes. Well, I investigated it myself, and I found out that the glycerin they were using, some of it came from questionable sources, from a kosher point of view. So therefore, from a kosher point of view, you can look at the ingredients up and down, you won't even find glycerin listed on the ingredients. It looks like complex. We have no idea what's going in there. Similarly, you go to a coffee machine, and you get a packet of non-dairy creamer. So what does that imply? Non-dairy. What does that mean?
Not
dairy. Is it dairy? It says not dairy, right? You look at the symbol on it, and it says O-U-D. What does O-U-D mean? So what is it? You look on the point, it says non-dairy. You look on the time, it says O-U-D. What is it? Is it kosher?
Dairy equipment.
It's more than so. Some say it's artificial, some say it's very different. It's more than that. If you look in the ingredients, you'll see it says contains sodium caseinate, a milk derivative. Now, because it's less than 2% of the ingredients, the government says it is non-dairy. However, milk derivative means it's dairy. Therefore, the OU puts the OUD on there, so it's dairy. Now, kosher applies to many, many other factions of society than just Jewish people. I know somebody who has a very high lactose intolerance, and he can't have milk. If he drinks coffee with the non-dairy creamer, he breaks out in hives. That's not dangerous. It's very uncomfortable, but it's not dangerous. Okay? So he looks for the word hard, because he knows that the government will tell him that non-dairy means non-dairy. But kosher D means dairy. You can buy a cookie that says on it 100% pure vegetable oil. And the government says they can use up to 2% of lard. You know where lard comes from? Mammals. Fish fat. Animal fat. So therefore, just looking at a package, just looking at ingredients, is not going to give you the answer that you necessarily need to know as far as toxins go. That's as far as ingredients. But there are more serious issues as well. And that is as far as equipment. That you have equipment, let's say, in a factory. Let's say they're making chicken soup. Okay? They're making a trade chicken soup. They're making 20,000 gallons at a time. Now afterwards, they're going to make a vegan vegetable soup. So they clean out the pot. They do what's called a CIP, cleaning in place, using hot water and detergent. Now that pot is clean. Is it kosher? No. Is it acceptable for vegans? Yes. So therefore, the soup that they make now, the vegetable soup now, which they're making that is saying kosher, acceptable for vegans, is straight. But the vegans meet their needs. We go in there, and we will kosher the equipment. I know a company that makes baked beans. They also make poultry beans. So when we go in there at 2:00 in the morning. We clean out the entire system. We put water in. We get the water up to 212 degrees. We rinse out that water. All under very, very tight measures. Make sure everything's done just correctly. And then while they're making the vegetarian beans, we have the Mashiach on the premises 24/7. So for the 3 days that we're there, we're making kosher beans and nothing gets by us. We take the refrigerator where they keep the meat, we lock it up and put a seal on it. The equipment that they use for the meat is locked up, put a seal on it. The labels are locked and put away. So we can ensure to the consumer, to you guys, that everything is done according to our law. Everything is done correctly. And you know, you have people literally all over the world. I have a colleague of mine, he has 70 plants in India. I'm going to Ireland in next month of Shabbos. I'll be there for 4 weeks. So I'll be away from my family. I will not be home for Hanukkah. I'll be in Ireland, watching the supervision. I'm in the plant there from 7 o'clock in the morning until 11 o'clock at night. 4 days a week, while the plant is in operation, to ensure that the products of the board are kosher. We're making soda. You know, soda has nice flavors, right? In order to keep the flavors intact, you need something to carry the flavor. Most of the time, that is alcohol. I go to one company that makes soda. the concentrate is 79% alcohol. However, that's a good news. The bad news is that 1 liter of concentrate makes 100,000 liters of soda. So by the time it comes to you, you can drink the soda for the whole week, day in, day out. It's not going to affect you at all, the quality of alcohol. That's the bad news. But the fact is, you look on the label, you will not see alcohol listed on the ingredients. This isn't there. And when we send out the ingredients in containers, these big labels on there, hazardous material, corrosive. Okay? And these are things that are on food products that people have no idea about. Next thing is as far as different hashgachas. Now, Abraham Lincoln once asked a very interesting question. The question is as follows. If you call a dog's tail a foot, how many feet does the dog have? Just calling the dog's foot a tail does not make it a tail. So same thing in kashrus. Unfortunately, or fortunately, kashrus is very, very big business. It's a over $4 million a year business in kashrus. And because of that, you have many people in kashrus who unfortunately either do not know what they're talking about, or give supervision because they get a paycheck to do so, but are not reliable as far as supervision. Therefore, rule number one on kashrus, and this I would say applies to all of you, find somebody you know. Find somebody you trust. So when you have a question about kashrus, you can ask them. It could be the rabbi of your shul, it could be your teachers, but you need to find somebody who you can trust who can give you answers as far as food products. I go to one company for the OU, to give you an example. I go to one company for the OU, and I'm at this company probably at least once a month. They're also under another kind of supervision. And I said to the plant manager, I said, when was the last time this guy was at the plant? It was back about 6 months ago, last January. He said, look at the sheets, 1998. Now, what does it tell you about the guy giving supervision? The last time he was in the plant was in 1998. How does he know what's going on in the plant? He did not even know that we kosher out equipment because there may be different products there. He just says, here's my bill. Send me the check. Your ingredients look okay. Put my symbol on it. Unfortunately, those things happen in the kosher world. So you have to know which are the reliable symbols. You can have a product that has this letter K on it. Now we all think K stands for kosher. You know what K stands for? K stands for the letter K. The government has decided that since K is not a registered trademark, it's just a letter of the alphabet, so anybody can put a K on a product. I was at one company one time, had a product coming in that I knew was not kosher. I looked at the ingredients, I knew 100% it was not kosher. So I called the company up, and I said, can I speak to the person in charge of product development? So the guy said, talk to me. I said, who are you? He said, I'm president of the company. Not bad. Got a phone call, president of the company. I said, we have your product here in the hotel, and it has a K on it. May I ask you, who authorized you to put the K on the product? He said, I did. I said, on what basis? He said, I called a friend of mine. I said, I want my product to be kosher, because it has a name for kosher. What do I do to sell my product as kosher? He told me, put a K on it. So I did. No government regulation. No supervisory agency, nothing at all telling him what he could and not do. He just put it on. If he had done the same thing with the OU, You know what would have happened? He would have been sued. He would have had to recall all of his product off the store shelves. He would have had to reprint all of his labels and take it to your OU office because he was in a street and the copyright law. The United States government doesn't like that. So therefore, it's very, very tough to put a registered trademark like the OU on a product that is not kosher or does not meet our standards. And our standards are high. We had it back then after 9/11. Indonesia was a very, very volatile place to travel to. They're a Muslim country. They did not look too kindly to Jewish people coming to that country anymore. And the OU was one of the first companies surprisingly saying, if you do not guarantee the safety of the rabbis going to the country, we will not supervise products. There are a lot of products coming from Indonesia to support the government. The government came back and said, we will ensure the safety of the rabbis. So we go there. We're in the trenches. We're doing there, working for you. So that you can make sure the product is kosher. Now, one of the questions I get all the time is something like different kinds of fruit drinks, power drinks. What's the story with that? Inherently, many of them could be kosher. However, again, you come into the equipment problem. I was in one company. They were making a power drink. Everything in the power drink was kosher. However, the day before, they were making non-kosher grape juice. The day before that, they were making clamato. Anybody know what clamato is? It's clams and tomato juice put together. Okay? And they were making it on the same equipment. And to clean the equipment, they were just rinsing it with water, because that's all they had to do from a product point of view from their company. And then they were making the Powerade on the same equipment, not even 24 hours later, with this cursory clean, because they figured any of the flavors from the tomato or from the grape juice that went into the power drink wouldn't be a problem, because they'll be swallowed up, quote, by the flavors of the power drink. Because the power drink flavors are pretty strong. So here you have a power drink that's 100% non-kosher. But you can look at the label all you want. You can talk to people all you want. You can even see people drinking it because they don't know. They simply do not know. People are not aware of what all goes into products. I was one time out in Thailand that I was, you know what shellac is? Shellac, you see the door, the wall in the back, the shiny wood? One of the reasons the wood is so shiny is because they put shellac on it. Now, shellac is a resin. Where it comes from is you have a beetle known as a lac beetle. And the beetle excretes this resin pretty much like a bee gives off honey. And you take this lac, it's called. The beetle dies. By the way, the beetle dies. They sweep it away. There's no beetle there anymore at all. They take this lac off the trees, and they deodorize it, and they whiten it. And they make shellac. And they also make food-grade shellac. And food-grade shellac is put on candies and vegetables to make sure they're nice and shiny. Now, the lac, or the food-grade shellac, is 100% kosher. Because there's no residual cause whatsoever on it. But these are things you have to know about. You go into a store and you order a salad. How careful are they checking the bugs and worms and poor things on the salad? There are many vegetables and fruits which are very, very problematic as far as bugs. And if you don't wash them carefully, you're in serious problems. It's as awkward to eat a piece of lettuce with a bug on it as it is to eat a $2 hamburger. Same halacha. And people aren't aware of it. Now you become aware because of companies that have salad washers, etc. But even the salad washers, if you go, let's say, Fresh Express, they have a tolerance. They have in their rules and regulations a tolerance of how many bugs are allowed in the salad, and they can still sell it. Consciousness does not have that allowance. And therefore, vegetables, some foods, have to be cleaned and checked before you can eat them. As simple as that. So going into a place and having just, quote, a salad could be very problematic. Number one, as far as the what could, how well they clean the vegetables. Number two, the knives and cutting boards they're using. Number three, the vessels they're using. Number four, their cleanup. These are all things that come into play when looking into something like a simple salad. And people just do not know. Are there any questions? What? Okay. He asked, what happened to the guy with the camera? Very simply, we simply told him that he's perpetrating the fraud. We had no power behind us. No, we had the cave under the trademark. So we had no power behind us. But we told him that he was perpetrating the fraud, he was selling something that's kosher, that really was not kosher. He was extremely concerned about it. Because he wanted to do the right thing. And he came back, he eventually became a kosher company. Because he wanted to do the right thing.
What about
Clients
OK?
Can you stop doing that? Okay. Can I have somebody to know if you do that? What? What happened if you don't eat kosher? What happened if you don't eat tacos? Or any of those? That's a question to ask your teachers. It's not for me to answer what your life's going to be like if you don't eat kosher. I was working in a hotel. I was doing a kosher dinner. At the kosher dinner, we started the preparation already all day Thursday and Friday for the dinner that was going on Sunday. And I'm there literally 12 hours a day watching what's going on. As the dinner is about to start, it's half an hour before the dinner, the maitre d' of the hotel comes over to me and says, Rabbi, could you please explain kosher to the entire staff? You have 5 minutes. Go. So I went to the staff and said, look, let's say we were having dinner here for people who were allergic, people with allergies. So you would have a separate menu that you are told to give to people who have these allergies. Would anybody in the staff consider substituting anything on the menu? What's on the menu? One person said no, because God forbid somebody gets very sick and maybe die and eating something that's not correct, right? So I explained to them, just like people have allergies, we have a spiritual allergy. Spiritual allergy we have is called kosher. That it's like a father who takes care of his son because he knows what's best for him. And he tells him this kind of food to eat, the father, the doctor, the nutritionist tells him what to eat. Well, the doctor of all doctors, the nutritionist of all nutritionists, are telling his sons, are telling us, this is what you need to eat. That's what kosher is. If you don't even have a child, let's say, who's allergic, let's say, to lactose intolerance. And he likes milk. So he drinks milk. So depending on how that is, he might never be affected by drinking milk, even though he's lactose intolerant. Another kid, the same exact thing, takes one drop of milk and gets violently sick. You don't know how it affects people. Kosher affects our souls. How it affects us, we don't know. But it does. And Hashem, who is a doctor, who is a father, takes care of us, tells us, this is what I recommend you eat. You don't want to listen? Then you have to pay for it. Somewhere along the line, it'll be eventually. But I don't want to get into a whole philosophical discussion now. But conscious is our spiritual life.
I don't understand what's so bad.
Okay. You have the lac beetle gives off a type of a resin, a type of, let's say take bees, okay? Bees go from flowers to flowers to flowers to flowers, right? Collect the pollen, they absorb the pollen, and they secrete a resin, a product that's collected in hives. That's called honey, right? The same thing pretty much goes on with the lac beetle. It digests product, whatever, and secretes and leaves on the trees what's known as lac. And that is made into shellac. Yeah.
Is it possible for products to make
sure they don't have ashtaka on it? Yes. The question is, are there products that are kosher that don't have ashtaka on them? At the OU, and many other organizations as well, we have groups of products. A group one product will be something that's inherently kosher. For instance, water, sugar, salt are inherently kosher. And this is where you get into different questions as far as some of the substandard hashkafas. You can have a hashkafa that people really don't hold by, but one of his companies happens to be a sugar company. So you could say that that product is probably what's called KDS. It's kosher despite the supervision. But there are products that are inherently kosher. Sugar, salt, water, etc., etc. The more processing you have on a product, the more problems you're going to have as far as kosher. Just to give an example how different areas are affected. I was driving in South Georgia one time. It's one of my favorite stories, so you've got to listen. I was driving in South Georgia, and I got a call on my cell phone. And they say, is this Norman Schloss? I said, yes. He said, I'm calling from the Georgia Department of Corrections. So the first thing I checked around to make sure no cops were around me, because I was going a little fast. And I said, how can I help you? He said, do you give kosher supervision to Famous Amos Cookies in Augusta, Georgia? I said, yes, I do. He said, well, we have a couple of cookies that were delivered to the prisons. We have a number of prisoners who are Muslim, and they hold what's called halal. And we want to know how kosher conforms to halal can we give the prisoners the cookies. So here you have people who are not Jewish, Muslims who, many of them are even anti-Semitic, but they look for the kosher symbols in the food that they want to eat, because we meet their needs. We have the organization out there. We have the people in the factories. So that if there's any product whatsoever, let's say there's a product with OU, and you want to know exactly what's being done, there is somebody you can call who goes to that factory. No, it's very interesting how we go to factories as well. I mentioned the bean company before, where I go to and I'm there all the time. Well, when I go to Ireland, I'm there for 4 weeks in time. Most of our hashkafas are companies that are kosher, for which all the products are kosher. We have things in place to ensure the kosherability of the products. Some of the companies are visited 3 times a year, some on a monthly basis, some on a weekly basis, some on a daily basis. But the main thing is they do not know when they're coming. One of my favorite things is that I was once told in a school, a kid came home and said, Mom, now there's Shmash Mashiach came to speak to us. So I said, no, not Mashiach, Mashkiach. Yeah. You know what the similarity is between the Mashkiach and Mashiach? Nobody knows who they're coming. We'll be the show of the companies. Where there's smoothies in a place that only sells smoothies. Again, so even if they're not supervised, I would strongly suggest that somebody go there and see what the operation is like. I was at one place once, they were making some of the sugar in the mall. They made this kind of product. And eventually they had to clean it up. So some of them had sinks right on the premises where they were cleaning. But that cleaning now, that cleaning was only done in between product, but said they're making a raspberry smoothie now, and then they make a strawberry smoothie afterwards. So they mix it out and have the raspberry making a strawberry. But at night, after they closed, they took all the equipment to a kitchen in the back that was shared by, I think it was a Waffle House and a Burger King. Put all the equipment in the same dishwasher, ran the dishwasher with hot water, about 120, 130 degrees, with definitely issues. So I can't give you a blanket yes or no as far as smoothies in the malls. The other question is, most of these places are using whole berries. They're using raspberries, strawberries, and you definitely have an insect problem on these fruits. If they're not checking for the insect problem, you have a problem. So, you need to make a good investigation. Even a company that says, well, you know, we do our best, yes, you look through everything, but we're not going to take any supervision. The very fact that you go there, see what's going on, and care about it, will give them an indication of how much they're trying to help on care. And they need to come back with an answer. But I've seen all kinds of things going on. But the main thing is the problem of the food infestation and where they're the equipment at night, not in between schools. Meat needs to have a stock. Meat needs to have a secure stock. No, you have to buy meat which has a good supervision or from a shop that has a good supervision on it. May have your habit. I don't know how it is here. In Atlanta, we have a butcher shop. He sells everything out of the counter there, and he has much gear on the premises. And then we have the supermarket like Publix and Kroger that also sell meat that have much gear on the premises. And they're the ones who take care of watching those things. Yeah.
Is travel care changing?
I'm not going to answer questions about different hushbubbles. You have to ask somebody else.
Let's say you go to the Burger King or McDonald's shop, and you want to get something that's not meat, like a smoothie or something, and you know it doesn't have any trade or cheese on it. Is it kosher?
Again, like I mentioned before, the problem will be number one in the cleaning of the equipment. I can tell you, point of fact, if you go into a place like McDonald's, no matter what you get, it's all being cleaned together with all the fresh stuff. So at night, when nobody's around, and they're taking the fryers that they make the french fries in, and they're taking the grills that they made the hamburgers on, and they're taking the blenders that they make the smoothies in, and they're all going into the same soaking, dirty, dirty water. They're all being cleaned together. So that means everything in the store is clean. Problem. Besides which, you also have a problem as far as insect infestation on the fruits and vegetables themselves.
What does Power have that Gatorade doesn't have that makes it kosher?
What does Power have that Gatorade does not have that makes it kosher? Very simple. You know what it has? This is a very important question. You're going to miss it if you're not going to keep talking. What Powerade has, that Gatorade does not have, is meat. Meat. I go to Powerade. So I go to some of the plants. Now, I don't go to all the Powerade plants, but I go to some of the Powerade plants, and I see what's going on, and we regulate the equipment, we regulate the ingredients, to make sure that there's no closure problem whatsoever. I also talked to Gatorade. The product I was talking about before, about the Clamato, and then my first grapefruit was Gatorade. So you have a problem with the making product there that is not kosher, with the exact same equipment, without kosherization, to make
Gatorade.
Yeah, does Gatorade
have
tequila? The tequila can. Anybody can put it in. I know things that have supervisional symbols on them in the place that one of I have one rabbi, both. I don't like those because it's not nice. It's a fact. He called me up and asked me, he said, you live in Atlanta, would you be interested in giving supervision for me? So I knew about his reputation. I said, I'm really busy. I really can't take on anything more. Said, well, let me ask you a question. Would you give supervision to a plant? Will you yourself or not eat the plant? Would you give supervision to a plant? Will you yourself or not eat the plant? And I said, why would I eat the plant? He said, because there's questions about options. I said, of course not. He said, then he won't work for me. Because he's willing to give supervision to a plant and say, it's kosher enough for you, but I won't eat it. I can't take that. I'm sorry. You'll have to answer for it one of these days. But that is not supervision. That is not reliable supervision. That's not kosher. They're all the kind of garments now. One of the things that you have to be careful with, that is there are many products that are made here in the States and that are also made overseas. For instance, I go to Ireland on a regular basis. When I go to Ireland, you know what I bring back to my kids? Wrigley's Garment Skittles. Because in England, those products are kosher. But when they are not allowed to take them to school, when their friends come over, there's a big sticker on the package saying, special production only, because it is not to be confused with the Wrigley gum or the Skittles that you buy here in the States. Now you'll have many stores, you know, that sell kosher products, sell products in Israel, and they will get Wrigley's gum, Skittles, other kind of things that are kosher and kosher made for Israel, but are not kosher in the States. And you have to be very, very careful to make sure you're buying only the product that is kosher, because the other ones are not kosher. What? No. In fact, many times we have products that are made specifically for Israel. In other words, I know, you know what the Pillsbury Pop and Fresh Dough is? You ever see the commercials for it? Some of the brands of the Pop and Fresh, or I'll be better than that. I go to a plant that makes the sauces for McDonald's. We make barbecue sauce, poultry sauce, sweet and sour sauce, all the ketchups, mustards, mayonnaise, even the special sauce. But it's only for Israel. Because when they make it for Israel, the Mashkiach is there to make sure it's 100% kosher. It has Hebrew writing on it and goes only to Israel. It is not sold in the States. Now, the barbecue sauce that they make, when they make the one for Israel, it's using regular vinegar. The barbecue sauce they make for the States uses non-kosher wine vinegar. Exact same product, different ingredient. One is kosher, one is not. One has supervision, one is not. You cannot get the McDonald's sauces, unless you come to my house, you cannot get the McDonald's sauces anywhere in the States. Only in Israel. Now you can go to Israel and bring some back here and use it. But that's about it. So you have products that are made for companies specifically for Israel or other companies, but they're not necessarily kosher here in the States.
Okay, last question.
Last question. Last question. Who wants to be the one? One of my friends asked me to make treasures other than Wrigley's and Skittles, but also kosher in other places. Especially in the country. I had a friend of mine, he asked me to bring back to him Southern Comfort. Southern Comfort is that of Kirk. It's only kosher when made in Ireland. And the reason is, and the same thing goes, you know, I don't know how many of you with Kahlua. Kahlua comes from Mexico. The reason why it's not kosher is because they add alcohol to the product to bring up the alcohol level. Now, if they add alcohol to the product and ship it to the States, they get very high taxes on it. If they add non-kosher wine to it to bring the alcohol level, then it's treated as a wine. And therefore, the import taxes are a lot lower. And that's why they're handing some of these products that are simply non-kosher because of the wine that's put into it. In Ireland, you don't have to worry about it. The United States is what that is. So therefore, they make it with good alcohol. It's a milky product because it's made in the same factory as Bailey's Cream, but it is kosher. I go to a factory in Puerto Rico, Don Q Club, 100% kosher. In this country where we've gone to, we check out the distilleries. One last story, I'll tell you one last story. The person was in China. They were making alcohol. It was a Japanese, Chinese, American venture. I was the only one there who spoke English. And I'm watching them make the alcohol. And I say, what do you use as a default? In other words, when you make alcohol, you have a lot of foam. And they want to get the foam down. How many of you ever had foam, or diet foam, and you had a lot of foam? What do you need is ready to get the foam down? What are you thinking of, right? You know why? Because you have oils and fat in your finger, and that makes the foam go down. So you need some kind of fatty substance to make the oil go down. So I said to them, what is a defoamer? They said to me, what's a defoamer? I said, look, down the street you're making beer. You drink beer. What do you do with the white stuff? They go around the table, they talk, all they say, turkey oil. I said, turkey oil? Are you using oil from a turkey or oil from turkey? Big difference, right? So they poke around and poke around. That's because they had a technical dictionary that both of us said, something to it, something to it. And so, here, this one we use. Now what it was castor oil. Castor oil comes from plants, and it's a sort of plant. And it's made in turkey. And that's why it's known as turkey oil. But it was 100% kosher, because it was plant derived. But they called it turkey oil. So there you see right away two important things. First of all, you can't necessarily believe what somebody tells you at first glance. But number two, I had to know the process of making alcohol in order to be able to answer the question about the defoamer. If you don't know the process, you ain't going to get the answer. So that is the thing also. All we do is be an expert in the field, knowing what's going on, learning about Zeus or Zeus. Going into a whole thing of how we make Zeus to make sure there's a separate quotation. And that was going to be a 2-hour presentation on how to make a nutrient smoothie. Whole chemical analysis. Now, unfortunately, I never took chemistry in high school. Maybe I should have. But I know now a lot more than I did than when I was in high school. So, the most of us, what I want to leave you with, most important, more than anything else, is the rule that I told you. When it comes to cocktails, simply the silver portion, and this is something you do all the time. Get yourself somebody reliable who you can ask your questions, who can answer your questions in a safe and reliable way so you can be sure that you're comfortable.